It's Rake the Moon episode 18, although we might as well call it Rake the Ashes, that season that had so much hope and it ended up drifting off into the ether like a county ground balloon. What are the game, the inquest, and who and what might be around for the next campaign? We'll rake the moon over it all. Hello Sam, I'm going to spare you the banter section because we probably should just get stuck into this straight away, I think. Firstly, I have to say I found the occasion, in a sense, a little bit uplifting that people turned up, sold out, did their bit as best they could with the tifos and balloons and flags. And there was even about 5 or 10 minutes when it was 1-1 at the start of the second half where it actually seemed like it might be possible. And then Dylan Markandy ended it for us all, I think.
Yeah, I thought that there was a very uplifting feeling walking into the stadium just before kickoff and seeing the ground as busy and as vibrant as it was and as loud as it was. And while it was busy for the Rovers game, it was certainly nowhere near as loud as it was on Saturday. And it did give that glimpse of what is possible with this community if the club can harness the power of the collective, which obviously it has failed to do quite uniformly for so long. But on this occasion, the community did step up, recognised the importance of the moment and contributed plenty early on and, as you say, around the time of the goal and just at the start of the second half. I still feel like for 13,000 people, it was not perhaps as loud as you might expect. And I still think that comes back to everybody anticipating the worst, as has been the case with our club for quite a long time. But it was a generally positive occasion, even if the result wasn't positive. And it was good to see the club trying to do something different with it, albeit in vain, and perhaps some could argue a little bit too late in the year, given the importance of some of the matches earlier and some of the other elements of the season and where it's gone wrong that might have been given a little bit more due care and attention. But yeah, there was what you saw on Saturday was the potential of what a match day atmosphere has been and could be at the county ground, and the fact that there is a market audience in the town that will respond to certain types of marketing, promotion, occasion, just general success perhaps, but there is something there, and there must be a way to tap into that more than once or twice a season. And hopefully that's a lesson that can be bought into, because I do fear now that we enter realms of severe apathy in 2026-27 if they can't find a way of kickstarting the community interest in a team that will be going into that record sixth successive year in League Two.
Yes, the end of last season kind of spared us that possible saga, really. The fact it was relatively uplifting and even at times fun. Before we sort of drift off from the match altogether, I guess this is a hypothetical question we will only know should we ever speak to Ben Middlemass. Did we A, think he was that good, or B, was he just unencumbered by the rest of the season compared to everyone else?
I thought he was quite quiet first 20 minutes. I was a little bit worried that he was being thrown in. I understood why he was thrown in. There weren't many other options after what had happened previously in central midfield, but it did look like he was potentially not ready, but then he found his feet. Obviously the goal is great. And the start of the second half, before he starts to cramp up, he shows plenty of encouraging bursts forwards. And, you know, he's well regarded in pathway football as being a technician, good on the ball, picks pass, can find space. And we saw all of that, and I thought that was great. We really can't allow ourselves to look at one appearance and go, oh, he's got to play every game next year, because we know what happens when we become too enamoured by a player too early and we give them too high an expectation level, which can become very difficult to meet again. But there was enough about him to say that he could prove to be a valuable and an interesting player for the club in a sort of squad policy next year. And he managed to deal with the occasion pretty well overall. But I'm not sure it was. It wasn't sort of a breathtaking performance, but it was compared to a lot of other performances in that part of the pitch in recent weeks, just a step above what we've been seeing.
Is there anything else that really sort of strikes you on the football side of the season before we kind of delve around a little bit more into how we kind of dissect it and how the club perhaps more significantly dissects it?
Well, from a footballing perspective, I think that it's been very hard to know what this team is when it's playing well, and what playing well is for this group of players, because I don't think that they've hit it what we've saying is playing well very often. And I'm certain that that game against Bolton has proven to be a bit of a challenge that they've not been able to rise to in terms of repeating that sort of level of performance, because it was just extraordinary. And there hasn't been anything else like it since. And I don't think there was really anything like it before either, particularly in terms of the hard, high press, which was just perfect against Bolton and practically invisible for the second half of the season. But also in terms of, you know, the fullbacks keeping wingers in their pockets, midfield being compact and capable of turning over possession and springing a counter-attack. It's sort of areas of the game where the team has been lacking in the second half of the season for whatever reason. And so I wonder what good is and where good is for this group. I think by most conceivable metrics, this season has been a failure. The manager has said on many occasions that not being top seven would constitute a failure. I think they are roughly in line with their budget compared to others in the league. There's not a lot where they've overperformed. And since the turn of the year, the performances have been steadily getting less and less convincing. And that's where I think the post-mortem needs to take place, as to what has happened over the past 4 months or so, and what could have been different to prevent it, and where has the club gone wrong in not addressing things quickly enough. And by club, it means different departments at different times and different individuals at different times. But from a footballing side, I still end the season going, what is this group's level? What was this group's level? And I'm not entirely sure. I mean, do you think that Bolton was the aberration? You know, it's not the rule.
I think you have to say that was a day where everything went particularly right. But the thing I'd always say about that is it just felt like they ran over a technically better team. They just, you know, almost literally, you know, in the sense of the energy and the pressing they put in, and that you never quite saw that elsewhere. So I think you have to say a 4-0 win over a team in a higher division who've gone on to make the playoffs, albeit with one or two changes, probably is an aberration. And maybe that's a stylistic thing, that they were able to do a little bit better against teams that actually wanted to try and pass and play, and the default of League Two is a bit less pass and play, and the default of football everywhere now is a bit less pass and play. So maybe that's why it stood out.
Which I guess will hark back to recruitment decisions in January in terms of what parts of the pitch they chose to reinforce and the type of players that they chose to reinforce with. And I think this is not exactly a controversial viewpoint, that they lacked, in the absence of Ollie Clark, they lacked another player that could do a similar job. And to be fair, they also prefer to use Ollie Clark in an 8 rather than a 6. So they lacked a Clark-style 6 to sit and hit and disrupt. And that was part of the conversation in January. They, you know, they had that conversation, and then in the end, they've got a player in Junior Hoylett who is there as another attacker to create. Did he do enough to justify being brought in that role? Probably not. There were some moments of real quality at times. Didn't really offer a great deal defensively. And perhaps on reflection, the club will say, yeah, did we need another forwards? We score goals, you know, pretty freely. One of the top 5 or 6 goal-scoring teams in the division. Our issue is letting goals in, and we didn't have enough senior defensive-minded players, particularly in midfield, to be able to keep the stem the flow of the goals. And that's what's ultimately cost the group. It's not the failure to score, really, though obviously the number of goals scored in the final month is not ideal, but it's the goals that have been let in, the type of goals, the timing of goals, which has cost them. And I would hope to see some resolution to that in their recruitment over the next 3 months.
Yeah, when your very basic defensive statistics are looking rather too close to Newport than anyone else, you've got a problem, I think. Let's move on to the bits that flirt between the general club structure and things on the pitch. The sensible thing to start, Sam, seems to be the article you published. I think you put it out free there, your kind of opinion piece, once the balloons went up, as it were, and it was all over. And I think the pretty unsubtle headline here: Swindon Town must embrace accountability to learn from this season's unmitigated failures. So what do you think and hope accountability looks like and should look like here?
So when I run a business, or when I've been in charge of a desk, my idea of accountability is that if you get something wrong, you're able to have an adult, frank conversation about it. Someone can be critical of you and you can recognize where those flaws are and then respond accordingly in a similarly professional manner. My concern here is whether or not there is the openness of mind and the lack of ego to allow for that to happen in certain places. There's a lot of very stubborn people people who are very sure of their convictions at the club, which is good. You know, it's important when things aren't going right. It is important to have that layer of confidence that you can try and see through that period of difficulty. However, if you are oblivious to the things that aren't going well and don't recognize there are certain areas where you need to adapt and you need to change, then it can be your undoing. And I feel as though in the second half of this season, a lot of those, that stubbornness sort of, it all came together in different ways. And it came together from things like not having enough rules and reg support in the building to manage the situation around Luton, because this is what ultimately has cost this club this season, because the debacle at Luton it's affected everybody, but particularly it affected the manager for a long period of time. You know, that it's not easy to deal with a situation like that, which is not necessarily anything footballing related, it's football admin related, and get that right, don't play Ollie Clark and file that team sheet correctly. I still don't think that filing the team sheet incorrectly by itself would have resulted in disqualification from that competition. So get that Ollie Clark decision correct, because there was absolutely no need to play him that day. And get that decision correct, and the timeline of this season can also be very, very different. And it starts from there. But there are decisions then that relate to how a manager manages his relationship with supporters. Holloway was subjected at various times to some pretty nasty abuse at different points. He lost his head at different points as a result. Some of the things that he read online, he chooses to go and read them, which maybe he should follow his own advice to his players and not go and read them. But when you read someone call you a cancer, when your wife has been, you know, through a couple of years of breast cancer treatment and you've been holding her hand while she's going through chemotherapy and taking every Thursday off to miss training and attend hospital with her and be with her and try and support her, and you're having to deal with the fear of what might happen. And when you've had such a personal relationship with cancer, to read your name being attached to it is pretty disgusting. And I can understand why he would therefore react in such a negative way. He's an emotional man and he will admit that he struggles to contain his emotions. However, it is such a critical point of being a modern football manager that you can somehow find a way to detach yourself from it at the same time, because responding in public to anonymous comments made on social media is very rarely a way that is going to successfully impact your own trajectory as an individual, as a team. Unfortunately, it is a way with the world now that footballers are expected to exist in an environment, a working environment, where they are allowed to be subjected to abuse. But if they give it back, then they're the ones in the wrong. But there is little way away from that. That does seem to be the way that it exists. And I think there was a failure to manage himself and some of his players' reactions at certain times, which created not necessarily a footballing issue, but a public perception issue, which has led to a significant chunk of the fan base being against him for a long period, and they remain against him now. That's very hard to win around, and I think it's an unfair reflection on the work that he did during 2025 to turn the on-field fortunes of the football club around. And I've said many times before that he did not get enough political capital from the fan base for what he and the players did in 2025. But the reason for that is because of his own weak PR for himself as a manager during that time. So managing that needed to be better, and they have to find a way of doing that too. And there's also the corporate element of communicating with supporters, ensuring there is an environment that entices people in. When you're in a business, retention is just as important as engagement. How do you keep people when they come? Some of that is obviously down to what happens on the pitch, but a lot of it is down to how you feel off it. And there have been far too many instances where fans have felt as though their club doesn't care about them this season. And while I'm sure there are people in the football club who recognize that this is not good, there are only some people, many of them at a slightly lower level, who are actually doing anything about it, really, who are properly doing something about it. And that element of care needs to be higher, in my opinion. It's not entirely the club's fault. There are restrictions from a budgetary perspective. Cash flow has and always will be tight. And we know from many different stories about how tight it is at present. And it's not easy to balance what you can deliver with what you want to deliver. But sometimes you don't need to spend money to show you care. And I think Swindon have failed on many occasions to do the stuff that doesn't take much money, but still leaves a positive light on the club. And that whole big ball of public perception and supporter engagement and a feeling of community and a bond, that all comes into it from the off-field side before we even consider the on-field side of players being rotated in and out, injuries and how they've impacted, and how they have to, from an accountability perspective, really examine what was causing the glut of hamstring problems that came over the course of the season. So any reasonable reflection on this campaign should analyse the training schedule, the training volume, the training methods, the facilities, and the amount of support staff that are available to a club. And you need to be completely open and honest and true to yourself about what might or what might not have impacted. Again, my concern is, because of the nature of this football club, because there has been a large amount of negativity, that the club will go into its own bubble, it'll pop inside its turtle shell, and it will continue to do what it needs to do just to exist, rather than to find a way to move forwards and grow. And that's where accountability is the first step. So I think, Andrew, there are so many layers there, and it feels like I've kind of rambled for quite a long time, but it's really important to recognize the different contributing factors that go into a period of such disappointment from a position of so much promise. And my worry is, if these lessons aren't learnt in the next 2 to 3 months, that next year we will get that season of apathy and we will fall back down and it'll be mid-table and slowly attendances will drop off again. and the cash flow will get worse and the debt will get higher and the progress will go nowhere. And until there are actual actions taken to make everyone feel better about the place and to make the place operate more efficiently and effectively and coherently as a unit, I think that we're going to go on just floating rudderless. And that's my worry about this football club right now.
I could respond to that in a thousand different ways. I was going to go off a slight tangent here. Let's suppose, Sam, there is some of what you take from that and that kind of spirit of openness and accountability. If you look at the football side, which is more my strength, and it's all relative than the commercial side, I'm trying to think, who else in the club? Well, there are obviously people in the club who can hold the manager to account, the owner and the chief executive, but who in the club can have conversations on the same level where the manager would feel comfortable with that sort of football knowledge, really? Who knows, in essence, the right questions to ask to have a review that would actually lead to something going forward? I think the coaching staff do challenge the manager, I think, at times. And I don't think they're all sitting around like Phil Neal next to Graham Taylor. It's not entirely like that. But I just wonder if, you know, there's some way that someone external might be brought in to do some sort of review of the football bit and ask things like, what did you do about set pieces? Because they're such a part of the game, or thing, you know, things like that. Why was the recruitment the way it was and things like that? So, you know, if I'm asking about set pieces, I'm probably about 2 years out of date. Who can identify what's coming next? What is your strategy? Because at the start of last season, Jamie Russell was introducing Mark Kennedy. So you had a director of football. And the first thing literally he talked about, because I can remember this being abroad, was, you know, the importance of how it was all going to be quite holistic. And, you know, there was going to be significant regard from Mark Kennedy to have the youth system functioned and all the rest of it. And now the youth system has been completely sort of, or Tim Bell's busy kind of restructuring from the start. People aren't coming on. So it's, can the people inside come up with some kind of coherent strategy? Because it more feels like they've tried different forms of pinball.
Yeah, I agree. And finding that strategy is really crucial. And I think one real hallmark of Glenmore Fooney's time in charge has been the chopping and changing between different methods that he's been trying to get to an end goal, which ultimately is a promotion to start with. You know, by the terms of his five-year plan, the club should be pushing for a championship at this point. And evidently, it's very hard to do that if every 18 months or so you change approach completely, albeit some of that has been by necessity because of the poor performances. But your strategy is it's always going to be a massive thing. I think there are a lot of jobs that are needed to run a football club. And if we're being honest, there are not a lot of people doing those jobs at this football club right now. And again, that comes down to, in part, a financial reality of life at this level, and particularly life at this level in the current economic environment. But if that's the case, they have to be better at it. They have to find more efficiencies. Yes, bring in external industry knowledge to support. Don't necessarily promote internally into any role or most roles that you can create, because that's not going to shake things up.
Sorry, I'm rattling on. I was going to say, I wonder if it sort of fits in with Glenmore Fooney's approach to business a little bit that he's given Ian Holloway. It's like, well, you're the football expert, mate. You go and do the football, and I'll come back and kind of check. It's you know, it's very difficult, I think. You know, just from our point of view, getting managers to really break down tactics, let alone anything else, to non-football insiders is quite hard. But I think they have to find a way of doing things like that.
Yeah, although he's kind of done away with the idea of a football director with Ian Holloway being there. And I think that's because Holloway doesn't want that. You know, but if Holloway doesn't want that, he has to recognise that he can't do everything. And I think the number of different responsibilities that he's had over the last few months has impacted on his decision making, and he has appeared to be less coherent in what he's trying to do. I think during 2025, for large parts of it, it was very obvious what his plans were. There were few, you know, big curveballs. I know some players were being played out of position, technically out of position, but that sort of became their positions. And there are very rarely were there times we think, what is this? What is going on? I guess there was Harry Smith playing at centre-back, but that worked. But otherwise, it was fairly coherent. I think in 2026, everything's become a little bit panicked. And it just gives off the sense that too much was in the coaches' heads. Too much was going on. They were reacting too much to other people rather than pursuing their own strategies and their own game plans and creating a structure and a shape that their players knew. And obviously that was impacted as well by injuries. But you need to have consistency. And they created a situation, partly not of their own doing, partly of their own doing, where that consistency was just simply not possible. And I think that part of this, again, comes down to having the manager being asked to do too many roles. And that includes becoming effectively the public spokesperson for the club from all angles because of a failure from executive management to get in front of stories, to shield him from stuff that he really doesn't need to be talking about. And I think that that's another part of this whole big ball that has come together in the way that it has in the last 3 months of the season. And again, when they reflect on it, they need to consider all these elements and be honest with themselves about where they've gone wrong and the mistakes that they've made. Because we all make mistakes. We are all allowed to make mistakes. The worst thing, though, you can do is to make a mistake that everyone else sees and then deny it.
So finally, let's try and do a little bit of looking forward. We await, of course, the retained list, who will be part of Swindon Town next season. There are quite a lot of players under contract to start with. A lot of the current squad did sign sort of 2-year deals at the start. But we have on the out of contract list, firstly, we should say, as you published initially in the Moonraker, somewhat unexpectedly, Harrison Minton, who we thought had a contract until the end of next season, is obviously coming back from his long-term knee injury. So what do you make of that, Sam? Hopefully they will give him something, at least to give him a chance to prove his fitness, I guess.
Well, we'll see. I mean, obviously Holloway did see him in action for half a season and then for a pre-season. So he's had a bit of a look at him already. They have to make a decision within the next like 10 days. So, I mean, without offering him maybe a cut price 1 year or something, it feels tough on Harrison. But you sort of feel that maybe he might have to look for a restart elsewhere. And I think that whole issue came up from an erroneous article published by the club in 2024 when he signed a new 2-year deal with a 1-year option. And it got mislabeled as a 3-year deal, which is unfortunate. But yeah, I think that maybe he might be one of several that we see departing. I believe there's a meeting, an internal meeting on Thursday, which will help with making decisions final. No one's really been communicated to yet about what's happening. So by the end of the week, perhaps they will have decided what their strategy is, who they're going to go after, and how much they're willing to offer these people. Realistically, though, Andrew, how many do you think are they going to viably keep? As you say, they've got 15 or so under contract. So if you want a squad of 24 to 26, you've got no kids coming up to be part of that group anyway. So if you need to have a bulked out group from outside, then you and you want to bring in 6 to 8, then there's not a lot of room for people to get deals who currently are coming up to the end of their contract.
Yeah, I think the biggest question is we assume Harry Smith is going to get offered something. That appears to have been the case for a long time. So I think of the experienced players, obviously Ryan Delaney is on the way out, but then you have Wright, Tafazoli, Clark, Hewlett and Bowden all contemplating their futures. And you can probably see perhaps quite a significant clear out there, would you say? Feel free to disagree. I'm going on kind of gut feel.
Yeah, well, you can only really go on gut feel because they haven't actually made the decisions properly at time of recording. So I think that's fair enough. Yeah, I think that they will try to offer Harry Smith something. Of course, just by offering doesn't mean that they will necessarily take it. And at this point, players' agents are working overtime to push them here and there to see what sort of comparisons they can get in terms of salary range and contract length. But I think the club do, of course, want to keep Harry, and that something there is the most likely. I think with Ryan Tafazoli, he came very close, I believe, to triggering a clause related to matches that would have seen him offered an automatic 1-year extension. And that fractured elbow might come at a cost for Swindon because he would have obviously had it triggered previously and then been under contract. But instead, he's not going to be under contract. And should the club want to keep him, and the data suggests that probably they should keep him in League Two, for sure, it's quite likely that he's going to attract some interest from other clubs too. So then there's the case of, can they offer something that is competitive? Does he want to stay, etc.? But I would be surprised if they decided that they wanted to let him go. I would not be surprised if they decided they wanted to let Will Wright go, which is obviously a bit of a shift from a year ago when he was made an offer. I think it was the same terms, just an extension of the same terms, or very similar terms at least. And that would be an interesting conversation now. He seems to have fallen away a bit in the pecking order. He had a bit of a torrid time in the last few weeks of the season, often, you know, when he was being asked to play more as a right back. So I think that maybe his stock has fallen a little bit. I don't know about you, but I expect Junior Hoyler to retire after the World Cup. So I think that that's highly unlikely. And Billy Bowden, it's not really worked out how he or the club would have wanted. And I believe that Holloway is a genuine admirer of him, but the amount of game time and the relatively limited impact he's been allowed to have either through team selection or injury this season has meant that he's not been able to push himself to the front of the queue. So again, I wouldn't expect that one. There are a couple of younger players who are probably pushing more, and they're Jake Batty and Billy Kirkman. I think that, you know, as left-back options, both are perfectly acceptable in League Two, and Batty, going forwards, at least showed an indication of what he can do. But I think the club first of all, have to decide what they're recruiting for in terms of formation and systems next year, because if they're recruiting for a back three, it's going to be very different type of fullback to if you're going to be recruiting for a back four. So I think that will have to come into the conversation in the next couple of days, and they're going to need to establish the style and the systems that they want to play. But I would expect that Batty and Kirkman both have made cases for extensions. I mean, particularly in the case of Kirkman, he is a fairly inexpensive but relatively dependable solution in multiple different roles on the left. So there's a good argument for him getting an extension. Otherwise, am I missing anyone? I guess Lewis Ward is the other conversation. Lewis is out of contract. And that would be interesting to see what happens there. He's obviously worked really well with Connor over the course of the season. He won the Values Award for the first team squad this year, and he's seen as a really useful part of the fabric of the squad, which within goalkeeping terms is actually really important to have a backup goalkeeper that is
working as part of a team. But there, again, there can be an argument to say, do they want someone who is there for succession at the point that, that Connor either moves on or loses the form, etc. Not to say that he will in one season. So there's an argument there. But I would envision 4 or 5, I think, which out of that many is not, it's not a large percentage.
Yeah, no, I think the Ward one is an interesting one because now he's not played, I think, a league game for 2 seasons because he was stuck behind Owen Goodwin at Wimbledon last year and he couldn't usurp Conor Ripley for league games this season. So maybe at some point he'll have to think, I need to play, or whether he is willing to be, at this stage, a dependable figure around the club. And I guess it'll also involve some debrief of how well Edmund Emmons has done. We've somehow, before we finish, weaved around what happens with Ollie Clark. So what are you thinking?
Of course. Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's a really interesting one because they've got to weigh up whether he can play the number of games they want to. And I think he played a lot more games than I thought he had when I looked through it. He made a lot more appearances than I thought he had. But at the same time, as being incredibly influential, he was incredibly noticeable by his absence. And is there a case for having someone brought in that can do the job on a more regular basis at the same sort of level? I mean, I don't think he's a wildly expensive player. He's not right at the top end of earnings, but it still is a really important role, and the club captain is going to be pivotal in any group. For what it's worth, I would offer another year, but for him, there might be a better alternative that's got more security somewhere else. So it's going to be interesting to see. And again, it will come down to what is the structure of this team? What do they want to play? Do they need an 8 that's crashing the box, or do they need a holding 6? And if so, do they think that someone else can do that role better than Ollie? These decisions all come, in theory, they come after the strategy bit, and then comes the recruitment. And that's what these conversations will be this week. Would you keep him?
I do think there's an argument, isn't there, for sort of dressing room coherence, although the manager does say he's not that vocal, even for someone who he regards as one of his leaders. I think my instinct would be to give him another year, even though he turns 34. I can't say there's an obvious sign of any sort of physical decline in terms of getting around the pitch and tackling people and breaking into the box and scoring goals. So I probably would be inclined, but thankfully, I'm not the one hanging over the purse strings. So, I assume recruitment will follow the old Gary Penrice missive of always recruit for a 4-3-3. So, we'll see whether any wing backs show up or not. We could go on. We probably could do a second episode right after this one to address a whole bunch of points that we have not raised. But time, I think, is beating us. A reminder, you can follow what's going on and off the pitch at Swindon Town for the very reasonable price of £5 a month with the Moonraker there. So there'll probably be news on the retained list and no doubt so much more in the off-season, because as someone once said, this is Swindon Town.